welcome to the May 2013 episode of the Portland Foot Commuting Podcast about buses, bikes, and low-car life in PDX. I'm Lillian, your producer.
And I'm Michael, Portland Afoot's editor. Each month, Lily and I bring you three practical bits of news that matter to Portlanders who get around without a car.
And we give it to you in the time that it takes the average Portlander to get to work. This month, we're talking about good news.
And some bad news, and some news about the future of Portland that will hopefully turn into good news, but is for now bad news. And the tip of the month, Lily will share some of her favorite things people said on TriMet, and I'll read a story that could only happen on the bus.
Enjoy listening. I guess the big...
Hold on, Lily.
What?
You've neglected to mention an important occasion in the life of the Portland Foot Podcast, and that is that its producer has just finished her undergraduate degree. Congratulations, Lily. We're going to congratulate you in the traditional Portland Foot fashion. A high five.
Oh, thank you.
Way to go. Lily just finished her degree in economics from Reed after many flirtations with the Bachelor of Arts degree, and has now consummated, or is about to consummate, that relationship.
I'm officially a Bachelor of Economics.
That's right. Congratulations.
And the other very important thing in Portland Foot history, which is the first murder mystery TriMet game happened
this past weekend. If you went to the game, that it was awesome. If you did not go to the game, you should look at our blog and see all the photos and think about how much you wished you had been at the game. And if this is your first podcast after learning about us after playing the game, welcome.
So let's get talking about
news
in TriMet.
News in TriMet. And you know, some bikes. We do some bikes. First thing we're going to talk about is the campaign for a fair transfer. Do you know what this is, Lily?
Yeah, I heard a little bit about this. So this is something that Opal, which is an environmental justice group in Portland, has been pushing for a long time, right? Which is extend the transfer times on TriMet.
Yes.
So what happened? It sounded like a lot of movement happened last week on it.
When you right now want to change buses or trains, you can buy a TriMet ticket and then it's good for 2 hours, basically. Or you can buy a day pass and it's good all day. But if you buy a TriMet ticket and you want to go a long way across the system and you need to change buses once or twice, your 2 hour thing can expire before you even finish the trip. Also, it's not much time to take a round trip if you want to take a quick round trip for an item in the middle of the day or something like that.
Which is totally allowed in Portland. This is not allowed in some systems.
That's true.
Like in Cincinnati, that's not allowed. You're not allowed to come back and forth on the same transfer, even if you have time left on it. But in Portland, that's totally an acceptable part of it.
Yes. TriMet Riders Advocacy Group has been trying for 2 years now to get TriMet to consider extending the length of the transfers to 3 hours and also to have unlimited transfers after 8 p.m. So in the off-peak hours in the evening, you could go to a movie and then come back and get some drinks or whatever, and you wouldn't have to worry about your driving drunk, and you wouldn't have to worry about your transfer expiring, and it'd be great for everybody, maybe. Anyway, that's their idea. So what happened was that after saying, oh, it's a terrible idea, it could never happen, we can't afford it, it would be irresponsible, we can't do this unless it's revenue neutral, last year, TriMet said, actually, that sounds pretty good. So they're going to look at some new data for Metro that maybe will show that it is not as expensive as they think it is. And they're going to look at what their budget is doing, which is better than it has been. And they saved more money than they needed to last year. They raised fares on all of us, and none of the problems they realized that they were trying to prepare for materialized. So they raised fares basically to make more money without any benefit to riders. This is a way to sort of give back to riders, I think, and it would be really exciting. It would be the best news after 5 years of really substantial cuts to the frequency and fare hikes.
As listeners to the Portland Foot Podcast for the past 2 years
have
noted,
we've had a lot of bad news to talk about, right, and this would be fantastic news, I think. So here's my question for you, Lily, and for you listeners, I suppose. Which would be more awesome, a round trip a 3-hour trip during the day or the all-night transfer after 8?
I mean, I think it's pretty clear. The all-night transfer after 8 p.m. Unless you're, I don't know, live in Southwest Portland and your bus is stopped running at 6:45 p.m.
That is, yes.
In which case, probably not as awesome. However, the all-night after 8 p.m. is great.
Mm-hmm.
You can leave, you know, leave your house at 8 and get back when the bus is stopped running. And
that's right. Yeah, so I guess one part of the question is, would it encourage anybody to take a transit trip? A huge part of the question is whether it encourages people to take a trip who wouldn't be taking the bus at all. Somebody who would otherwise be driving but can say, I'm going to pay $2.50 instead of $5.
I have a hard time believing that someone that has the option to drive would necessarily choose, would be so price sensitive that the difference of $2.50 for one half of their trip would make a difference.
Okay.
I don't know. I think this might make someone that might choose to bike transportation.
I'm all for it. I think it's awesome.
I think it's great. I don't think it's going to make a huge difference to me. On nights that I decide I want to take transit, I would have paid $2.50 to come home anyway.
Okay.
But I don't think it's going to shift my approach a huge lot. But it's going to be great. I mean, it's just a great benefit for riders that are already.
And we should say it may not happen. And as something that the general manager of TriMet said during, when they introduced this, was we may end up looking at the numbers and deciding we're going to do the 3-hour thing but not the all-night thing. So I assume that the all-night thing is actually only there as a bargaining chip that Opal decided to put in. I could be wrong. Which leads us to the last thing I want to talk about on this topic, which is, what do we think about Opal in general? So it stands for Organizing People Activating Leaders. They started out in 2009, I want to say, as a environmental justice group that was looking mostly at air quality in East Portland. And basically they couldn't, even though asthma is a huge problem, especially among poor people who live near highways, they just couldn't get enough people interested or activated about it. They couldn't get enough funding. They couldn't get enough members to show up at meetings about it. So they started to look at other issues, and the thing everybody cared about was public transportation. So they have been doing this for 3 years now. They started about the same time as Portland Afoot, and this is their first like major, this would be, if it goes through, their first major victory, and it looks like it's going to be a victory for them. So I thought it'd be a good time
to say.
Well,
they fought for Youth Pass, right? And
that was
a victory for them
as
well.
Yeah, that's sort of been an intermittent victory, but
they were not the main champions by getting to keep it. It was really the city of Portland.
That's right.
It was Sam Adams.
Right, and part of that is because they're ambivalent about Youth Pass, because they're focus is in East Portland, and most of the East Side doesn't get a benefit from Youth Pass.
Because they're not in the city.
In PPS.
Portland Public Schools,
right.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing about Opal. I would love for to see it in 10 years be as strong as, like, the LA Bus Riders Union.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are...
Or what about the BTA, when you were there? Like, that was about 10 years... You were there 15 years after the BTA started?
Yeah, I don't...
This is the bicycle...
I never anticipate... that you will be able to activate transit riders in the same way that you are able to activate
bike riders. Why is that?
I just genuinely don't believe it. I always say that it's easy to recruit bike riders because they're taking their safety into their own hands every time they use them.
It's very visceral.
And there's a very clear... It's easy to turn bike riders into activists. And I think transit riders, they're just getting where they're going, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I don't anticipate that Opal will... be able to lift up and be as strong as the BTA is 15 years after they start. And you don't have major corporate interests available to sponsor an organization in the same way that, like, you can have Chris King, Hubs, and Giant Bikes, and Fuji Bikes all sponsoring the BTA's work.
Yep.
And this massive network of bike shops. You don't have transit pass shops, so...
Yep, we've noticed this at Portland Afoot as well.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, the business network that supports bike advocacy groups is just not there in the same way.
Right.
But I do believe that Opal has... 3 years is very young, and if they manage to pull off this victory, that is a pretty exceptional... victory for a 3-year-old scrappy little organization.
Yeah. Credit, by the way, a few episodes ago, we talked to Chris Smith, the planning commissioner and Portland Afoot board member. This is yet another instance of Chris's pulling the strings behind the scenes. He was the one that, according to Opal, that like first was like, oh, that's something you could win. And that was part of what set them along the path to selecting this as their first campaign, is 3 years ago, a conversation with Chris where he said, oh, that seems like something you could eventually win. And Chris is awesome.
So, thank you, Chris Smith.
Yeah, well, secret for y'all. You want to move on?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really interested in this next topic. So, I'm, as someone who just spent 9 months deep into research land, this is like a really cool piece of independent research.
Yes. So, what happened was this dude named Ray Terrell, who has a blog and rides TriMet, did a public record request of TriMet and just as a citizen asked for a bunch of data on which ticket vending machines are actually working at any given time. And he calculated the percentage of uptime, because TriMet has long said that they're up for 90% of the time. And anybody who's tried to use ticket vending machine is like, that doesn't seem right.
Yeah, like anyone who's ever tried to get on a transit machine, get on a MAX.
Well, I don't know. The ones at my station, 60th, or I would say that 90% is about right, actually. But I could be wrong. Anyway, he found out that there's a lot of variation. So the data showed that the worst station in the system is a TVM at East 162nd Avenue. The westbound vending machine there is only up 63%, 64% of the time. After that, Lentz Town Center is up 67% of the time. There's the Convention Center eastbound is up 69% of the time. And then that goes on, and eventually you get to a bunch of ones that are up 99% of the time. But the problematic TVMs are pretty problematic, and it was a great piece of work, and TriMet sent out an email to all its riders explaining that they're trying their best to upgrade them the day after it came out, and the newspaper wrote something about it, and it was an awesome little bit of information activism. It raises the question, of course, about how TriMet is deciding which TVMs to upgrade and like how much it decides that this is a problem, and is it based on the communities that it's in, and like when TriMet supervisors are deciding which machines to service first, does that have anything to do with neighborhoods they and their friends go to? So it just seems like the top two worst machines are Outer East Side, and there's some other Outer East Side ones on this list.
And the really good ones are really at 99%
right
uptime. So the West Beaverton,
yeah,
99.58. I mean, the top 10 ones are all 99.
Pioneer
something.
Pioneer Courthouse Square
uptime.
Albina, Mississippi.
Yeah, no, I'd love to see this like done some sort of geospatial regression where we actually plot these on a map and look at them against like neighborhood characteristics.
That can be your next undergraduate thesis.
Yeah, no, I think one's enough.
All right, you want to move along?
Yeah.
You can check that out at pdx.be/TVM investigation. Now I'm going to talk for a bit about our sponsor, SolarCity. Portland Afoot's podcast this month is sponsored by SolarCity. You've already put your smart energy lifestyle on the street. SolarCity wants to help you put it on your roof. Not the roof of a TVM machine, but the roof of your house. If it's right for your home, you can take advantage of the amazing state incentives that are actually decreasing as more and more people go solar. So it's in your interest to get in ahead of the curve. And if that's not enough, if solar power turns out to be right for your home, then your installation will also support Portland Afoot's reporting. If you want to lock in those generous incentives and get on the solar bandwagon soon, you should go to pdx.be/solar to contact Roma. He's a great guy. Just let him know we sent you.
Great.
Moving along. This topic, Lily, is one that I think it's going to lead into a topic that we've been talking about for a long time and grumbling about, but I don't think we've ever devoted a topic to. But it starts with some good news, which is that this company called Isla Bikes, which is a British children's bike manufacturer that sells mostly on the internet, is coming to Portland. There's a great piece about that on Bike Portland this week, and looking at this company. They've decided their North American headquarters is going to be in Portland because there's lots of skills here locally among the population of how to make bikes and make them awesome. So that's nice. And it's part of this larger thing where Portland is sort of acquiring a reputation nationally, or has acquired a reputation as like a place where cool bike stuff happens. And it's also acquired a bunch of people who've moved here and know a lot about bikes and transportation and low car life in general. And
Portland is still doing a great job of attracting bike businesses without doing anything. Because what happens is, you know, we've got this in economics, we call it the economics of conglomeration, but essentially it's beneficial if you're bike company.
This is why all the Asian stores are on 82nd.
Right, right.
You know that 82nd is the place to go.
Right, exactly. You know, and all the floral shops in Brooklyn are on the same street because there's a lot of benefits in terms of getting parts. It's the distributor, you can gang up on orders, the distributor is more likely to visit Portland and deliver things here. You know, you're going to get visits from sales reps for things that you want to partner with. You're going to have access, this is very important, you're going to have access to employees who are knowledgeable about bikes if you're located in a city that has great biking. And we've been doing a great job of attracting.
But here's a question for you, Lily. What if a city ceases to be so great for biking compared to other cities? What if there were a huge development in the world of bicycle infrastructure over the last 5 years that Portland just completely ignored, or almost completely ignored?
Or our mythical city almost completely ignored.
Yes, I mean, our hypothetical city that might or may not be ours. What would happen?
I mean, eventually what would happen is bike businesses would move. But I think Portland has been getting complacent. And I think part of it is the fact that we've been doing a very good job of kind of maintaining the programs and the infrastructure that we have.
So this is like our bike parking program, our neighborhood greenways program that keeps expanding.
Our Sunday Parkways program.
Our Sunday Parkways. This is like the sending everybody out on bikes and on Sunday.
Our, you know, the city does Women on Bikes programs, does the summer riding programs.
We have
Walk and Bike to School Challenge Month at
5-foot bike lanes along a lot of major arterials.
I mean, we have great bike facilities. Everybody's sick of hearing about Portland, though. And no one is excited about anything new that we're doing. Like, you go to national bike conferences and you say you're from Portland and you're kind of embarrassed to admit it at this point because people are just like, oh, yeah, Portland, we've heard about you before.
But that's not it, because that's not all. Like, if we were still way ahead of the curve, it might still be exciting, but we're not.
Exactly,
so, like,
yeah.
San Francisco and Chicago and Minneapolis and D.C. and New York are all going gangbusters with these physically separated bike lanes that have plastic poles, bollards, separating traffic from the bikes, and in some cases they've even got like cycle tracks, which are like sidewalks just for bikes, and we've got two of those, but they're
both kind of poorly implemented.
Right, so the country, this is doubled in the last year, the number of miles of these around the country, and it's going to double again this year, and Portland doesn't have plans to build any of them right now, and it makes it... It's the most exciting thing going on in the world of bicycling, and it's going to lead to massive growth, I think, in bicycling.
But here's the good news for businesses. We have time. Mm. We're not going to have firms get up and leave Portland immediately.
No.
And we have a really substantial base of bicycle businesses.
Right, and we have by far the largest bike share in the country. It's 6%. Nobody's coming close.
But in 10 years, if we're still not making great progress on really moving forward, and we have a great refrain at the city that, like, Portland wants to be a world-class cycling city. We don't want to just be the best in the U.S., because we really are. We're still the best in the U.S.
Yeah, agreed.
Rapid increase in bicycle facilities in other cities that we've seen in a really short time span. Portland's been building this infrastructure network over the past 20 years, and New York City pretty much built all of their bike infrastructure in the past 5.
Mm-hmm.
And they have had phenomenal increases. And recognizing that, like, it won't take long for us to be outlapped if we don't keep working and pushing forward on bike facilities.
And it's not just a matter of pride. It's a matter of continuing to build on this locus of jobs and reputation that we have, and that, like, is continuing to make low-car life popular, because we're, you know, people are moving to town because they've heard about Portland and they're enthusiastic about this stuff. If Portland ceases to have that reputation, then, you know, people will be as likely to move here as they are to move to Houston or whatever.
Right. And it's not just bike businesses, by the way, that this attracts. Like, we're able to have a startup scene for tech because Portland has a reputation as a livable city.
Yes.
And one of the first words out of people's mouths when they talk about Portland's livability is usually bikes.
Right.
And so recognizing that, like, bikes mean business, not just for bike businesses. Bikes mean business.
We're opinionating a lot today.
We are.
Yeah.
We're very full of opinions today. I'm still working off my sleep debt from thesis, and I'm pretty sure Michael's still recovering from
planning the game. Coolest day that Portland has ever had on Saturday, who whacked Fairless Square.
So. I will not deny it on the air. It was an awesome time. So let's move on to...
Low-car tip of the month. Do you have one for us?
I do. Here it is. It's bike time, bike season. Time to get your bike out and take it on the max, which is what I do very frequently. And I will tell you that the way to efficiently move your bike onto the hook on the max is simply to put your knee into the saddle of your bike. Take your seat, turn your bike up, keeping your back wheel rested upon the floor of the max. And in order to hoist it onto the hook, whatever height you may be, the easiest way is usually to stick your knee into that saddle, and that will give you the power you need to get it up there.
As a 4'11" woman, I can tell you this is, with a very heavy bicycle, I can tell you this is a fabulous trick. The real key being rolling on your back wheel to get your bike to be vertical before you do
That's true. And it's also something you can roll your bike out vertically when you get off the max, too. That's a pretty good trick.
Especially on a crowded train.
Yes, exactly. All right, do you have any TriMet tweets of the month, Lily?
I do, although I actually have two. I had two things posted on Facebook about TriMet that I could not resist. Oh, so this is
diversifying.
Yeah, we're diversifying this month, especially because all of our Twitter is from Dan Christensen, who was quite prolific earlier this month. So from Facebook, number 38 bus driver, when asked if he had big plans for the Derby de Mayo weekend, yes, it's my cat's second birthday, so we're having a party. Also from Facebook, my bus driver is angrily making balloon animals and then throwing them behind his seat every time we get stopped at a light. I couldn't make this stuff up. Dan Christensen on Twitter, our favorite tweeting TriMet bus driver. Overheard on my TriMet bus. Did someone turn in a wallet with $300 and some weed in it? I laughed. Dan Christensen. People by day have such crazy expectations of TriMet bus and drivers. At night, they're just glad to see you. And also, overheard on my TriMet bus, look, the 4 bus is so bad, they need 2 drivers. I was riding with my trainee. You have an Only on the Bus story for us.
This is actually one. Oh, I do. But this is one that you found for us. And it's not a traditional one. This was actually in the Best of Craigslist. So I'm going to read a post that was originally posted as a Women for Men personal and then was selected because so many people were passing it around as one of the best posts of Craigslist. This was from Portland. Here it is. Did you leave a prosthetic leg on the bus this morning? Women for Men. I found a prosthetic leg wearing a Lucci's brand cowboy boot on the bus this morning. I'm not sure what brand the leg is, but it's only the shin and foot portion, and it's not mechanical looking. Rather, it looks semi-real, almost like it could be from a giant plastic doll or something. I hope you don't mind, but I went ahead and tried the boot on. Magnificent. At first, I wondered why a prosthetic leg user would have purchased such a comfy boot. Then I figured you probably have another leg and foot that actually work, and they probably really appreciate the cushion and arch support provided by the Lucci's boots. I really hope I can meet you and ask you more about your condition. Do you get charged half price for pedicures? That would be screwed up if you didn't. Do you think they'd charge me full price if I went in for a pedicure with you? Anyway, I want to give you your prosthetic leg back because I imagine that you're hopping around, or worse, forced to wear a makeshift papier-mâché leg, or worse, forced to wear a thick tree limb like a pirate. Hopefully we can meet for lunch sometime and I can give you your leg back. Oh, and please only respond if you're attractive. You see, there's this fantasy I have, like a modern-day Cinderella, where I finally meet the owner of the leg and he turns out to be a charming prince. Well, maybe not a prince. I want you to be a sexy cowboy war hero who's had one of his legs and both of his testicles blown off in a grenade explosion in Afghanistan. It would be really romantic for you to sweep me off my feet in some cafe downtown, and then we'd both fall over because your makeshift tree leg wouldn't be able to support both of us. We'd share a laugh. I'd kiss you on the cheek and then reattach your professionally made prosthetic leg for you. Based on how breathtaking your prosthetic leg is, I can only imagine that you're incredibly handsome. I would have taken a picture of the leg only for the pleasure of readers paging through, but I don't have a digital camera. I did the best I could sketching it. Please know that this is no way as amazing as the real thing.
And that's our show.
That's our show. You can subscribe to the show at pdx.be/podcast and send us any comments you have at podcast@portlandafoot.org.
You can spread the word about the show by searching for Portland Afoot on iTunes and leaving a review. And you can sign up for our forthcoming mobile phone magazine at portlandafoot.org. You can follow me at Anomalily on Twitter.
And you can follow Portland Afoot on Twitter and Facebook, too. I'm Michael Anderson, your editor.
And I'm Lillian Kerbake, your producer. Thanks for listening, and remember to exit through the back.
Pass on the left.
And don't forget to thank your bus driver.